This is Monday, September 24th. Questions and answers.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Such is the nature of life, that all it asks and all it wants is an opportunity to appear. You are that opportunity, and so am I. It is the purpose of this teaching to make this essential truth of our being, to become aware of this essential truth of our being. And I hope that everyone is doing that, and I hope that people have not forgotten this idea that we are one with this thing called God, that it's this life, this intelligence, this wisdom that is working through us all the time. We are individualized expressions of the only life there is. We are individualized expressions of this thing that we call God. Therefore, we can consider us gods and goddesses. And I hope that that is slowly sinking through. The reason why that is so essential is because if you think that your power is outside of you someplace, or you have to go someplace else for this power, you have to beg this thing called God for anything, it usually doesn't work out very well, and your life doesn't work out very well. But when you realize that you're one with the only power in the universe, and that you're able to use that power to bring into your life what you want, then you can do it. And this month we were talking about, we started with affirmations, which are absolutely wonderful. We did visualization, which was a good thing. And we did we didn't get into affirmative prayer. This little booklet tonight that I handed out is from Unity, and it's affirmative prayers. They're very short. They're very good. I just wanted to go here at the very beginning again and reiterate this. Affirmative prayer is a positive, life-affirming approach to prayer. It is not a practice of begging or beseeching God. The brand name churches want you to beseech God. They want you to beg God for something, the way they teach it is that you think, oh, I have to change God's mind. You never can change the mind of God. The only mind you can change is your own mind. So, in Unity, we do not pray to influence or persuade God to do something. Rather, we believe God is all and that, as spiritual beings, we are one with God. We pray to reconnect with the divine essence of our being and to focus on God's infinite goodness within us and within all people. So that's what you're doing with prayer. You're realigning your thinking so that you can think God thoughts after it. Or you can think better thoughts about yourself, better thoughts about God. The whole idea in life is to think better thoughts about yourself. You can think all the wonderful thoughts you want about God, but if you think that you're a piece of garbage, it's not going to do you any good at all. And I find this in my life. I run into so many people that still do not understand this and still have not one idea of why they're going through this experience and so forth. And they also want to blame God for things. Well, God likes that person better and this, that, and the other thing. This thing called God never shows favorites. Please don't do that to yourself. So if you use these little affirmative prayers, and some of them are just that little affirmations, they're absolutely wonderful. There's something for everyone here. Confidence and courage and guidance and happiness, everything is in here. Health, whatever you want, you can pull these out and use them. Here's prosperity. The Spirit of God is working in me and through me, and I am prospered in all ways. You have to be able to use these little things and have them in your mind so that, as I said before, when we're idle, when we sit idly, our mind starts to throw things up at us. And it usually throws things up that we don't want. When you're sitting idly and the mind starts that, you have to be able to have something to counteract it with. And that's what these little affirmative prayers, that's what affirmations are for. Or positive thoughts. That's what it's about. You have to convince yourself that this is a wonderful, wonderful experience, that this is a wonderful, wonderful world that you're living in. Otherwise, you go right down the tubes with everybody else. You go right down the tubes. And we don't want to do that. We want to rise up in consciousness. My whole idea is the way we are thinking is changing, and it's changing more rapidly than ever. That has to do a lot with, I think, technology and so forth. The technical stuff that's out there is so vast right now and so instant and all. And I think our minds will eventually catch up with all that, you know. I think I told you this once before. When we're born into a conversation that's already going on. So when we were born, what was the conversation that was going on? I was born during the war. So that was a big thing there. We didn't know about computers. We didn't know about calculators. We didn't know about anything. Now, when we start to get those things and we start a computer and so forth, we think, oh, this is how could, but a little child goes right up and is able to do that because they are born into that. See, that consciousness, that mind is already there. You are never living in your generation. You're always living in the child's generation. And we think, oh, they're living in our generation. They're not. We're living in the child's generation. And that's why I think children are getting smarter and smarter and smarter all the time, because there's this vast conversation that's always going on, and we're born into that. Race consciousness, the whole thing. And it's wonderful when you see it and when you realize what's going on. That we really are living, moving, and having our being in this thing called the mind of God. And I think this internet and this World Wide Web and so forth, I picture that as the mind of God. And it'll eventually get bigger and bigger. So look at all that. Look at all that information is contained. Where is that information contained? You know, if they call it, I think, in the cloud now or something. It's a cloud or something. We didn't have that before. But more and more information is stored. So, in the mind of God, there's infinite intelligence, infinite knowledge, and that is what we are trying to see. And, as I said before, we cannot become puppets of our conditioning. We cannot be convinced by the world. We just cannot. You have to say, no, that is not right, and I can think differently. I don't care if everyone else on the planet is thinking that way. I am not going to think that way. And who do we have as the biggest example of one mind that was able to do that was Gandhi. He conquered a whole nation by using the power of his mind. By using the power of his mind. And we're starting to be able to do that. So this whole teaching is about mind. It's about your mind. Yes, it's about living, moving, and having our being in the mind of God. But if you do not respect your own mind, you are not going to respect the mind of God. And it's not going to help you. You have to keep changing your mind. Today, scientists realize that this brain of ours changes constantly. It's plastic. We can learn at any time. We used to have that old saying, you can't teach an old dog new tricks. That's absolutely ridiculous. We can. We can open up all kinds of new areas in our mind. And that's what we're trying to do. That's what this teaching is trying to do. You must be able to see things differently. Differently. And you must be able to go through life differently than most people go through life. When I say that, that means without all these nits and fleas, without all the jealousies, without all the hatreds, without all that kind of stuff. When I grew up in my family, my mother would say, well, I can forgive, but I'll never forget. Well, you might as well they thought that was a wonderful saying. They thought they were righteous. They thought they were next to God by saying something like that. You can't. If you don't forgive and forget, you're carrying it with you all the time. And you're using that. That's absolutely ridiculous. We have to learn to get over all that programming that we had. And that's all we are. We're just programmed into these things. So the idea is to learn to think for yourself. You know, this teaching, and I said this before, does not teach you what to think. It teaches you how to think. Brand name religions teach you what to think. They want you to think this way. You may think anything in this teaching. It teaches you how to think, how to use your mind correctly, how to have positive thoughts, how to do affirmations, how to visualize things so that you can bring into your life the wonderful things that you want. It also, the main thing that we're always teaching is that you can have joy and happiness all the time. You do not have to suffer. Suffering is an option. You're choosing to suffer. I mean, it's an option that's out there. You can choose it if you want, but why would you want to? Look at the biggest... The biggest institute, the biggest religious institute that teaches suffering is what? Which one? Yes, the Catholic Church. Absolutely, it teaches suffering. And they think that that's wonderful, that you're, the more you suffer, the better off it's going to be. My friend, I tell you about my friend Doug the Baptist. When I talk to him, he says, well, I'm really struggling now and life isn't what it's supposed to be. But Dallas, in the next life I'm going to have everything because I've suffered so in this life. And now, what kind of an affirmation is that? And how do you want to start out your day with saying, I think I'll suffer more so that when I die I'm going to get... And you hear it, don't you? Isn't this true? They think, oh, I'm suffering. That means that's really good, and God's really going to now reward me when I get to heaven for suffering. God's going to look at you and say, are you dumb? Are you stupid? What was that all about? Why did you do such a thing? But you can't tell those people. I have known Doug the Baptist for 30 years of mine. Thank God he's in Georgia and I'm here. But we talk on the telephone, it's always the same. He never changes that Baptist attitude of his. It does not change. I used to take him to the Religious Science Church, but he couldn't grasp it. He could not grasp it because it's so instilled in people. I think my own brother is so instilled with that kind of stuff that he won't change. It doesn't mean that I don't like him. I just don't bother to get into those subjects with him because he's sure he's right. And I'm not sure that I'm right, but I just feel better about the whole thing, you know. I could be wrong. But we have to think of a new way to go through life, a better way to go through life. So this month we were talking about tools, and these are tools that we can use. Tools to change our mind. Not to change the mind of God, but to change our mind so that we don't have all that negativity and all those old things that pop up in your mind. You're not good enough, you don't have enough, you don't do whatever your mind is telling you. It just constantly babbles. So, if you have affirmative prayer, if you have affirmations and so forth, you can run those. And I run them all day long. Otherwise, I go right down the tubes also. Because the world's very convincing. It's very convincing. So, that's what we were doing this month, and I hope that you've learned something from it, because you have to do, you have to have tools to be able to work with and use those tools to build up things. what are some of the tools that the other brand name churches and so forth use? Well, one of them is the rosary beads, of course. And we have prayer beads. A lot of religions have prayer beads. Or worry beads and all that kind of stuff. That keeps your mind, if you're doing that, you're not worrying. You see, you just keep doing those things. So, those are tools. Those are techniques. So, incense, hell yes. Candles, all that stuff is to bring you something. Bells. What is it? A heavy date. No? Anything good? All right. Are there any questions, people?
Andy?
Well, I just have... I talk to my sister every day. My sister and I are very close. We are total opposite.
Yeah.
And she's very heavily entrenched in... Christianity, yeah. Pentecostal,
the biggest church
in LA, West Angeles.
That's a charismatic church, yes.
That's a what?
A charismatic church.
So we just disagree on many, many subjects, and my interest with her, no, my, what I would like her to do is to start questioning things. She said something today that was so ridiculous. I couldn't believe it. She said, Bach or Beethoven were Moors. I said, Jackie, they're Germans. They're not Moors. Well, I read that somewhere. I said the Moors didn't get up that far.
No.
They penetrated the lower part of Europe.
Yeah. They got into Spain, I think, as far as that's...
Spain, France, Italy, well. Greece. It penetrated those countries. They penetrated. No, they didn't get up to Germany. So I said, okay, I'll research it. So I did, of course. It said they were born and born.
Well, of course.
but my point being, with her, I want her to start questioning things and really dig, because she's highly intelligent, but she questions nothing.
Yeah.
If the church says something, that's it.
Yeah.
And it's carrying. Oh, it has carried over into her other parts of her life. Yes. Like somebody telling her something as ridiculous as that,
yeah.
And her not questioning it.
Yes, not to think about it. I'll tell you a cute one. A friend of mine. She's no longer with us, but when we were living in New York, she kept telling people that St. John the Divine's Church was the oldest Gothic structure in the world. I kept saying to her, Jan, that cannot be true. She said, oh yeah, it's the largest, but it's not the oldest. There's no way it can be the oldest because America isn't that old, you know. And
is it the one in Egypt?
Well, yes. There's so, but you couldn't get her because she just believed anything that comes down the track.
Okay.
That's what you have to. You have to use wisdom.
Yes.
You have to say, oh, well, that can't be right. America's not that old. It couldn't be the oldest Gothic structure in the world. You have to be able to see those things. But people don't. They just swallow all that stuff. People are lazy, you know, and it's getting better. When I was younger, and when you probably were younger, if you were born into a religion, you stayed in that religion. If you were born into, if your parents were Democrats, you stayed Democrats. Oh, even Democrats all our lives. Well, they're doing, you know, think about it. Do you want to be a Democrat? They take it for granted and they never think past that. I'm born a Democrat. I'm born a Lutheran. I'm born this, that, and the other thing. Now, I was born into the Lutheran religion, and I've left that. But The whole time I was in that church, and it had to be 20 years at least, because 18 at least, and catechism and the whole works, you know, it was just...
You have catechism?
Oh, yeah. Because it, well, because it's structural, and on Catholicism, you know, he was a Catholic priest, Martin Luther. But what they never said, and last year I discovered this, Martin Luther was anti-Semitic. Huh? And he wrote 2 books on it.
Oh.
He hated the Jews. Now, here the religion and the people in that probably never heard that, never asked, never questioned, never do.
I've never heard that.
Yes, what's that?
But
you
not
could.
That.
Yeah, then you can Google that one.
I Google everything.
Google, but that's because I. Wow. Yeah, and. We are missing so much information,
mm-hmm.
and we think we, you know, we think we know everything. We're missing so many pieces of the puzzle all the time, and we think, oh well, I have an education, I know all that. Well, you don't know. You don't know what that is. You're only learning what those, what one book said or what one professor says about something. You have to learn to think for yourself. When I was in ministerial school, we used to have these round things on Saturdays and Sundays and all. And the other, the ones just coming in would be at a table. And they, you would, I would be there, asking them questions, right? And they would always start out with, I'd ask them some question, they'd start out, well, Kennedy says, now Kennedy was the teacher and the minister. Kennedy says this. I said, yeah, but what do you think about it? What is your opinion? Well, Kennedy said, I said, I don't care what he says. I want to know what you say and what you think about it. You see? He was doing them harm because he should have told them not to do that. Remember when I say to you, you may use anything I say. Use anything from me, but don't say Dallas says. Take it and make it your own. Make it your own. Otherwise, you're not learning anything. You're not learning anything. And most of the churches out there, they don't want you to learn anything. They want to keep you where you are, and institutions want to do the same thing. You have to learn to think for yourself. And that's what this whole thing, I think, if we think of this infinite thing that we call God and this mind of God and all this, we're individualized expressions. We have to think differently from each other. We can be similar, we can agree and so forth, but we have to think different thoughts. We can't say, oh well, it's ironclad, this, this, and this is the way you have to do it, you know. And when the first church, the Catholic Church, started, how they got everyone to think the same, they killed off the ones that thought differently. They just got rid of them? Yeah, they killed them. Didn't you know that?
What?
They did. That's how they got... If you to kit the Catholic Church so that everyone was thinking the same thing, if somebody of a group started and they thought something, they just killed them off.
That's an abortion.
Yeah.
They killed off everybody.
Yeah, they just killed off everybody. Just get rid of them. You're going to think the way I think, we're going to kill you. So, learn to think for yourself.
What I think is, I think I want to know what Dallas thinks about that new scroll wherein Jesus reportedly said, "My wife."
Ah. Well, that's been around for a long time, and they.
Okay, but now they found a scroll.
Yes.
Wherein he's quoted as saying, "My wife."
Yes.
Was it Mary
yeah.
Magdalene? Hello.
Yes. And, well, they also think because in some of the scripture it says he's called rabbi, and rabbis are married.
And I take that back to a book and a movie I saw by Brown, wherein he questioned the Last Supper in that he felt there one of the participants was a woman.
Yes. And she was the chalice.
So I want to know what Dallas thinks.
Yes. I think it's absolutely possible. There were women who wrote different chapters of the Bible. They've been ripped out of the Bible. You don't get those anymore. I think they're in the archives. I think they're in the Vatican Library.
I think Ruth, yes.
But Mary wrote also. The Book of Mary. It's not there anymore. So, things, you have to look at this stuff. They wanted, when they had that council at Nicaea in France, when was that? 400 something. Well, those people weren't very intelligent, you know. So if they couldn't understand it, they threw it out. They said, well, we don't understand. How's the common person going to understand? They just threw them out. You know, the Bible was put together by a committee, and you know how that works.
A committee?
A committee. We have revelations in the Bible simply because they said, if you vote for this, this, and this, we'll let you have revelations. I said, okay. So that's how we get that in there. So it's not all that it's cracked up to be, the Bible. I think I explained to you before about the Bible that in order to unite Israel, there was the Southern Bible and the Northern Bible. They combined them.
Southern and Northern, where? What continent?
In Israel.
In Israel.
Yeah. They had to combine those. And that's why in the Bible, you can see in the Bible, the stories are told twice. And they're called doublets. And when you see a doublet, you realize that there was two books put together. If you could find it immediately reading Genesis. There's a short story of the creation, and there's a long story of the creation. And they're both in the book of Genesis. They wouldn't give them up. They said, well, we'll do this if you let us have, and they put that together that way. Nothing wrong with that, but they should tell people this is what happened. You know, people think, oh, that was the word of God, this was this. For years, hundreds and hundreds of years, they thought Moses wrote that stuff. Moses didn't know how to write. You know, well, you think about it. He came out of Egypt, right? He was educated by Egyptians. Egyptians never wrote. They had scribes. They never, a wealthy, educated Egyptian didn't write anything. They had a scribe that did that for them. I was beneath them. He didn't write any of that stuff. So you just have to keep looking. But none of that takes away anything. You know, when I find out all this stuff, I don't go, oh, it's not awful. I think, ooh, isn't that wonderful? Yes, it's interesting, and it expands me. I don't throw out the baby with the bath water. I hold on to that. I hold on to the fact that I absolutely believe there's some power in this universe, and that it's a power for good. Call it God, call it Harry, call it anything you want. We are one with that. That is pulsating through us somehow. And we are able to use that. And all the rest are just trappings and twaddle that people have added on to it, you see, that these are holy sacraments. These things aren't holy sacraments. They made all that crap up. They may become holy now because people do them so often. But, you know, I don't think that this thing called God says, oh, you have to have the stations of the cross, you have to have this, you have to have a wedding, marriage is a sacrament, baptism is a sacrament, you know. Somebody called me this week and wanted to be baptized. He said to me, how do you do it? I said, with a garden hose. Well, I have a garden hose.
Okay.
Hose them down. You know, you don't have to do all that kind of stuff.
What year was the Bible
written? Oh, I have no. But
what century was it?
Well, I don't know. Well, the stories about Jesus were 500 years after he died. So, you know, and since no one carried a tape recorder around, how do we know exactly what was going on? And then it's been translated and redacted so many times from Aramaic into Greek and then into the, you know, they just kept doing it. I mean, it's lost most of its meaning. Now, metaphysically, when you read the Bible, you have to read it, and you have to say, this is my life. Because it's a movement of man, it's a movement in mind, it's a movement in consciousness, and if you look at it, oh, I'm reading about myself, you'll see what that's all about. Those wonderful stories of Jonah and the whale, all that stuff. Wonderful metaphysical teachings. And Jesus, of course, was a metaphysician. And he used what? Parables all the time to teach, which are the easiest way to teach something. And the people could relate to that and all. And then when the Catholic Church, you know, came in, most people had no idea what the Catholic Church was ever doing, you know. Do you know why? Well, it was all in Latin, for Christ's sake. No one read Latin. Those people that went to church didn't know what that Latin was. They had no idea what it was. It's all done in Latin. They could have been saying anything. So, do you remember when they changed the big uproar in my lifetime when they decided not to do the Mass in Latin anymore? And, oh, my. Yeah. So,
who understood it?
No one. No one understood it. Maybe the priest did.
I remember my mother had to take Latin in school.
I took Latin in school, but what do I remember? Agricola. No, that's about the only thing I ever remember about Latin. Oh, and I can do, I can sing Jingle Bells in Latin.
Wow.
Let me see if I can do it for you. Yes, in Latin. Tinny on, tin tin tamaroon. Jingle bells, jingle bells, jingle bells. Tinny on, tin tin tamaroon. No. Yeah, we had to learn all that. Oh,
wow.
God.
I only remember Regina Chile, Letare,
Alleluia. Yes, I see. But we just have bits and pieces of that. So anyway, use your own mind and use your own senses and know that you're doing right and that you are one with this thing called God. And you're never offending God, by the way. You're never offending God. You have a mind and you can use that mind. You can use it the way you want to use it. That's the wonderful choice we have. Now, when we align ourselves with what we think is the mind of God, better things happen to us. Better things happen to us. Because we're aligning with this power in the universe. And that's what we're trying to do. We're trying to align ourselves with this power instead of always somewhere else with it. But learn to love yourselves. Learn to see this wonderful world and all. That's what this is all about. It's not learning all these prayers. It's not learning the Bible, or reading the Bible up one side and down the other. You may do that if you wish, if that's a project you'd like to do. I tried that. I never thought, oh my goodness, I thought it was difficult.
I thought it was extremely difficult.
And boring. So somebody said to me, did you ever read the Bible? I said, no, but I saw the movie. They didn't like that.
What I heard on some talk show or some newscaster show, and they were talking about religion, and they said the reason the Catholic Church made the rule, the law, that the priest could not marry is because Jesus wasn't married. Now, I thought it was something else. I thought it had to do with the inheritance.
That's what I thought.
That the inheritance would go to the families rather than the Catholic Church. So they wanted the inheritance to go to the Church so that they disbanded or prohibited marriage. But then this new thing came and said the reason the Catholic Church is because Jesus was not married.
Well,
I hadn't heard that before.
At the very beginning, priests were married. Then they decided the priests shouldn't be married, they should be celibate, because they didn't want a member of the church needing a priest and saying, can you come to my house? And he says, oh no, my wife's sick. I can't leave. Or my child's sick. They had to be available for the flock. They had to be available for that. But I think also, well, now I'm stretching, I'll have to really think. The popes could be married at one time. I do know, though, that the popes were very corrupt when it first started, and they had orgies and all kinds of things going on.
Mm-hmm.
They were allowed to do all that kind of stuff. And then they cleaned their act up. They just kept getting, as they got more power, they decided different things. But it started out as a corrupt thing. And, of course, it's patterned after royalty, for Christ's sake. You have a pope, that's the king. You have the cardinals, you have which are the dukes. Look at the dress and the clothes and so forth. They mimicked royalty. They just, yes, they mimicked all that kind of stuff. And then you can go further than that. They think God sits on the throne.
Mm-hmm. They sit on the throne.
Yes. And they have a crown and they have, you know, so all that kind of stuff.
God.
Yeah. With the staff and the scepter and all that kind of stuff. That's all made up.
Mm-hmm.
It's wonderful theater.
Pageantry.
Yes, it's wonderful. I love watching it. I'm glad they have all those things. And those beautiful robes and so forth that those people sit and sew and do. That's wonderful. Wonderful. But does it make you religious? You know? If you walked in, churches and cathedrals back then were the only thing. I mean, people were living in gutters, for Christ's sake. They had dirt floors and so forth. And the only entertainment they had was to go into a church and say, oh, look how beautiful this is. They wanted to flock there after they sat in these hovels all week. They went to the church to get beauty, to find something. And of course, all religious paintings, all religious paintings at the beginning were nothing but propaganda.
All
yes, you could. Yes. And here's a one.
All you had to do was say five Hail Marys in an hour.
Right.
And your sins were forgiven.
Here is the one that got me when I found this out. Do you remember indulgences? And that you could buy your way out of hell by buying an indulgence? I forget what century they were selling these indulgences. But they sold millions. They made millions of dollars selling indulgences. Can you imagine what millions of dollars was worth back then? The church made millions. That's how they got all the money. Yeah, I'm thinking of doing that.
Good
idea. Yes. So anyway, it's all, you just have to keep thinking for yourself and seeing those things. Don't get angry at me, and some people get so angry. I don't. I think, oh, I'm glad I know that. I'm glad I found that out, you know. But it doesn't change the fact that there is this power in the universe.
Mm-hmm.
It doesn't change that fact at all. And that's, we have to keep it simple like that. There's a power in the universe and a power for good in the universe, and we are one with that power, and that we can use that power. And that power, we always say, is a power for good. Therefore, we have to be good. And look how many times we're told that we're not good. And that's an out-and-out lie.
Understand?
Yeah, it's an out-and-out lie. You cannot do that to yourself.
Even Joel Osteen says, confess your sins and make sure you're in a Bible-based church.
Yes. Well, he teeter-totters, that man, you know.
I'm sorry?
He teeter-totters. He's very close
Absolutely.
He's very close to, yes, but then he teeters right back again because they can't think out of the box that they got themselves into. There are a lot of priests that are metaphysicians, but they can't do anything about it because they can't go past that box that they put themselves in. All the doctrines, all that stuff that the church teaches, you know. So, where does it all come from? It's a made-up story. Most of it's just a story. Most of it is complete myth. Has nothing to do with reality whatsoever. But that does not take away from this thing called God, or whatever you want to call it, a higher power, that there is something that is holding this whole thing together. Otherwise, there'd be chaos. Why don't the planets run into each other? Why doesn't, you know, all this stuff? There's an order somewhere. And then the whole idea about life itself, meaning our life, human life, animal life, all that kind of thing. I'm thinking now of the idea, you know, I think I've told you about HeartMath before. That's an organization in Northern California. And they do a lot of research on the heart and to see how much power the heart has. And some people can extend this power 8 feet in front of them, which is, you know, the Spirit of the Lord goes before you and makes your way clear. You can do that, and they can measure this kind of thing now. And then I think I told you about there's nobody on this planet, regardless of how much intelligence that they have, no one knows why the heart in a fetus starts to beat. It just starts to beat. But now, here's the newest one I discovered. As the fetus is developing, there is a pulsation starts, and then the heart starts to develop. You have a pulsing thing. Where does this pulsing thing come from? See, it has to come from this power. It has to come from this thing. So all these, when I read any of that stuff, just makes me feel grand and better, and I believe more that there is this thing. Now, when I die, do I think I'm going to go to heaven? I doubt it. You know, I'm going to go someplace, but you have to make your own heaven. Your own heaven is in your consciousness. You have to do that for yourself. We do that. But we have to believe in this thing that wants us to succeed, wants us to have everything, wants things to be wonderful for us. And we just keep denying all that because we don't think that we're worthy. So it's always going to boil down to those four things: worthy, deserving, totally lovable, and that you matter. Always going to boil down to those things. You know, and when I do the counseling and so forth, at my private counseling, every time it's people that they never know those things about themselves. They don't know. So the whole world's out there. No wonder we're in the shape we're in. You see, if everyone knew that they were worthy and deserving and totally lovable and they mattered, everyone would love everybody, you know? But we allow the little ego mind to tell us, oh, that person's better than you. And that's not true. It's not true at all.
There's a We were talking yesterday at lunch, a group of us go to lunch every Sunday, and we were talking about science of mind, and someone asked some question, I can't remember what it was, but I said, well, you know, I question science of mind the same way I question Christianity. I don't agree with everything in science of mind, and I would rather prefer to think of myself as a metaphysician rather than a science of mind.
Well, absolutely.
You know, because there are a lot of questions that I ask.
There's still a lot of questions. I have a lot of questions, and they're in his tomes, you know. So many people think, Ernest Holmes, yes, he wrote a book, and it's called The Science of Mind. But he gleaned all that information from other things. It was not his original thoughts, people. It was, you know, and he put them, there's a thread that runs through all things, and he just took all the threads and put them together in a book, and a concise little book, which makes some sense up to a point. The last few chapters and stuff, you know, it's a. But I think some of those threads are questioned. But I think that last part of Science of Mind was done by his brother Fenwick.
But he wrote. What are they called? The papers after the book. He wrote. What are they called? The lectures.
Yes.
And in the lectures, he did a lot of changing and correcting.
Yes.
Changing.
Yeah. Well, we have to keep. We have to keep thinking and changing as our
and
mind.
Rejecting some of his original.
Yes, ideas. Absolutely.
And people are still teaching that book like it's, the gospel.
You have to be able to say, this is what I think today. And when I find out more information, I'm going to think differently tomorrow. But they get dogmatic. And they think, oh, I have to stick with this because I... No, you don't have to stick with that. You know. I love it when I come... Whoa.
An aha moment.
Yes. And then you go... You build on all... You just have to keep building your own mind, your own consciousness. But what it boils down to is no... That this thing called God is working in as and through you. And if this power is working in as and through you, you must be one with that power. And then you must be able to use that power. And we use that power with our mind. Because where thought goes, energy flows. And we can prove that. That's what it's all about. Andy, do you have a question? You've been sitting over there, taking notes? Well, he's texting his friends and doing everything else. I'm telling you, you have to watch him all the time.
Kids' generation. Kids' world. Just trying to stay
open to it all.
We're waiting for you, Andy.
I know.
I'm picking on Andy. In his own thoughts.
I know.
In his own mind.
You do?
I was just in case it got really slow.
Well, give it to us.
If you're working on intuition,
yes,
and you're trying to develop it, such as don't go out with her,
right?
You'll be sorry, or stuff like that. Now, how do you know if it's intuition or your brain messing with you?
Ah. So we're going to go into that. That's called mind traps, and we're going to go into that next month. But you have to be able to distinguish that, and you do that by building your own mind power where you know that the voice that's doing that is the right one. Because
on the right side of it.
Yes. Yeah. You have to know which one. And I'm going to go into all that next month. The next month's whole theme is called mind traps and how the mind will trap you constantly. No. Andy, I have time for one more question. Tell us how you use this, Andy. You've been with me for how long now, and wonderful things have come into your life, haven't they?
How I use this?
Teaching.
I use this teaching I use it for insight. I use it for wisdom. I use it like I use affirmations to think better thoughts and feel better feelings. But then also when I come to points where I need to decide something, I get quiet and I focus on it and I listen and I listen until there's some sort of response or an answer or an idea. That's how I use this.
Yeah. And that's what how you use it. You use it to gain clarity so that you're clear on what's going on. And then you build confidence and so forth. You're not afraid when you say, oh, my intuition tells me not to do that. Then you say, good, I'm not going to do it. And suddenly your mind says, well, maybe you should try it. And if you'll find out, every time you go against that intuition, doesn't it always come back and bite you?
Once
only once. It usually goes right back and you go, ooh, I had that, I knew that first thought was right. Yes. All right, if that's it, we will end with, it's wonderful, and so are you, and so am I, and there ends the lesson. Thank you.